Good morning. This meeting is now in session. My name is Angela Ryder. I am the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, November 27th, 2023, and I'm calling this meeting to order. Folks, on this video conference, please mute yourselves until it is or you have been called upon to eliminate any distractions of background noise. Please note that individuals who are disruptive or speak without approval from board chair will be warned to behave in a professional manner. If the disruption continues, the individual will be removed from the meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. Executive Director Tom Augerton, will you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Sapscott?
Present.
Vice Chair DeRoost?
Present.
Chair Ryder?
Present.
Three present, two empty chairs.
Thank you. Item 3 on the agenda, pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during a public meeting, subject to a reasonable time. The cutoff time is 2 minutes and will be timed by board staff. Place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may task the matter to be put on a future agenda. Please be advised a call to public is not an opportunity for testimonies for cases that are being reviewed by the board and, again, must be within the jurisdiction of the board body. Do we have a call to public? Please raise your hand on the screen and you will be called upon. And it appears that we do not have a call to public this morning. Item number 4, board members should have had an opportunity to review the packet sent out by staff. Are there any conflicts of interest regarding any of the cases or investigative reviews that we're conducting today? And there are not. Item number 5, board members, you should have had an opportunity to review the meeting minutes from October 23rd, 2023. Is there any discussion to be had regarding these open meeting minutes? And there are not. I move to approve and accept the open meeting minutes from October 23rd, 2023. Let's do a voice vote and unmute, beginning with Vice Chair DeRoost, and indicate your approval or opposition of accepting these minutes.
I approve the minutes. Madam Chairman, we first need a second to your motion.
Thank you.
This is Board Member Tasker, and I second that motion.
And now we will continue with the voice vote.
This is Vice Chair DeRuth, and I approve.
Board Member Tasker, I approve. Aye.
Chair Ryder, I approve. It is unanimous, and the meeting minutes for October 23rd, 2023 have been approved. Please note that all the audio recordings for our meetings are available online at the State Board website by individual meeting date. We originally, for item number 6 on our agenda, we did try to have a presentation. Unfortunately, we were not able to commit to that. So we do not have a presentation for today, but we do have some wonderful presentations scheduled for the future in February and March, which we will discuss a little bit later today. Item number 7. So these are going to be some comments to the board members and the staff. Items number 7A, update on the State Board Advisory Group. And I would like to defer to Executive Director Tom Augerton, because you were at this meeting. I was not able to attend due to my client's schedule. I do believe that Board Member Tapscott was also in attendance at that meeting for the advisory group. Would you give us an update on that particular meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott, would you like to go first, or would you like me to do the overview first?
I would refer you to the entire thing. I don't have anything to add to the discussion.
Okay. Madam Chair, board members, so the first meeting was held. It was primarily organizational. It's chaired by Mara Concordia, who most of you are aware was the first chair of the board in 2003 when the state board was established. And the second meeting is actually scheduled for this week, November the 30th, starting at 11 a.m., and we have a sufficient number of responses of attendance to where there'll be the ability for the meeting to proceed. At the first meeting, there was some general discussion, but like I say, it was primarily organizational, with the chair at that meeting attempting to outline some of the directions that would be pursued by the group. For those who are not aware, historically, we've had a panel like this for the board going back about three and a half years ago, the last time when the State Massage Board went for its regulatory review by the Governor's Regulatory Review Commercial Commission, GRC, G-R-R-C. And at that time, the group was put together for the first time, again chaired by Mara Concordia, who is an LNT and owner-operator in the Tucson area. And it was an adjunct to staff in terms of research and industry representation, and at that time actually included involvement with physically going down to the meetings and testifying and also providing research materials. So it was a hands-on group at that particular time in the board's history when there was a need for a fairly quick turnaround to the inquiries being received from the staff over at GRC. The thought, I think, Madam Chair, that you had this time is that there may be a need, and in fact, it was determined that there is, to reactivate the group. The chair has agreed again to shepherd these meetings and to take a look at a number of industry-related issues, not the least of which is operational issues based on available resources, funding, technology, and so forth. So as I indicated a moment ago, the next meeting, which are public and online, is scheduled for November the 30th, beginning at 11 a.m. The meetings are posted on the website and are open to the public should someone like to attend.
Director, I had on my schedule that it was beginning at 10 o'clock. Is that incorrect?
Let me double check the information I just gave you. I thought it was 11, let's see. I have it at 11, and that is what the notice was that went out. I see the Assistant Attorney General nodding.
Okay. I will double check my schedule. I was planning on attending, thinking that it was at 10 o'clock. I may be with clients, but I will do my best to be there.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to respond.
Absolutely. 7B on our agenda, briefing by the group member from the advisory committee, Stephanie Rodriguez. If you're on the call, Stephanie, was tasked with attending the California Massage Therapy Council regarding massage therapy programs. Now, what California does is they have a once-a-month meeting dedicated to their schools, and then they also put out quarterly newsletters. Is Stephanie here on the virtual call this morning?
I am here.
Stephanie, could you please give us a wrap-up of what your experience was with that call, please? Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. So I attended the last monthly call. This call was actually very short. It probably lasted 15 minutes or so. But it was headed by the school advisor for the California Massage Therapy Council. And basically, he just sort of introduced what they do as far as the council goes, and talked about some changes that the California Board of Massage Therapy had made recently regarding the MBLEX. And then once that piece of information was over, they just opened the floor up for questions and comments from any of the school administrators or advisors. Now, these calls are open to the public in California. They have a dedicated conference call number posted on their website. They have a passcode. None of that ever changes. It's always there. Anybody can call in to attend these calls, but they give priority for comments to school administrators and school owners. And so one person is in charge of kind of overseeing these calls with the California Massage Therapy Council. And all school communications. And then a couple other things I wanted to mention. Their industry newsletter is pretty interesting. I looked at a few different copies of it, and that is sent out on a quarterly basis. And what they do is they put any new legislative briefings or any new industry information in those newsletters that are important to schools. And, you know, I think with the administrative challenges with our board, it would be great to put that type of information into the school call if there was someone to head this up that was on our board. And then after that, you know, just open it up for questions from the attendees so we can keep lines of communication open between our Arizona schools and the board members. Let's see, there's a couple other things. The calls can last anywhere between 15 and about 45 minutes, depending on the content that's presented, and then also any questions, you know, that are fielded from the attendees. And they also put in, like, Q&As of the month. They do health advisories. They do updates on fees. So all of these, I think, are really great ideas for us to be able to communicate with our schools on a more regular basis. And the other thing about California Massage Therapy Council is they have like an educational standards division, and they also have a school advisory. And this is in addition to their post-secondary board. So it, you know, it's a little bit similar to the kind of setup that we have here. But as far as the educational standards, I would probably defer that to the post-secondary board, but I might have the board entertain the idea of having a designated school advisor or maybe even a small advisory committee set up that could respond to any school needs or school inquiries in between state board meetings. And that's what I've got.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. This particular topic was brought up because we've had some challenges with communications with schools as far as them getting their questions answered. And I think that it's a very good idea to, you know, change some things up and perhaps consider, a phone call dedicated to the school advisors and administrators, a quarterly update for the schools that might go out. The challenge here would be to not overwhelm the current board staff, that it would have to be done on a volunteer basis. And perhaps this is something that our advisory committee can discuss a little bit further.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to open the floor open to open the floor to our other board members to see what your take is on this information. Let's start with Board Member Tapscott.
I don't really have much to input. I think more communication is always better. I really welcome this information, but exactly what you pointed out, Chair Ryder, is my concern is that it has to be a volunteer thing because, the massage board is terribly understaffed and undersupported. And that's a fact we talk about at every meeting. And so a lot of these great ideas we have to be completely driven by somebody outside that office because they're doing their best to protect the public, review cases, and issue licenses. And so, assuming we could set that up on a volunteer basis, yeah, I welcome that. I think that's a great idea.
I think so, too. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of people who are willing to help outside of the board. However, something as detailed as this does need to be overseen by the board as well. So it does put a little bit more work either on the board staff or on the board members themselves. Vice Chair DeRoos, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Yeah, I think my only thoughts are I like the idea of being innovative and kind of being addressing the issues. Obviously, more communication is great. So I think it's a good conversation to continue to have to see what that looks like and are there ways to increase the communication with the school.
Thank you. And Stephanie, once again, thank you for taking some time out this morning to update us on the call.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Item 7C. So this was brought up in our last board meeting that I wanted to discuss. This is a discussion, review, and possible direction to staff regarding language in ARS Title 32-926. There was a copy of this put in the packet, and this is regarding unlicensed massage performed under the chiropractic license. This topic is being brought forth due to the overwhelming amount of misinformation being put out regarding the ability to work under a chiropractor while not yet having a massage therapy license. It is being brought up in our meeting so that massage therapy programs as well as LMTs can pass accurate information on to those who are awaiting licensure. I'd first like to review the ARS Title 32-926 from the Chiropractic Board. So for those on the call who don't have it in front of you, board members, you should have a copy of this in your packet. Practice of chiropractic without license prohibited exemptions are, A, it is unlawful for a person to practice chiropractic in this state without having first obtained a license as provided in this chapter. Work as a chiropractic assistant except under the supervision of a doctor of chiropractic and pursuant to this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter. Using the abbreviations CA or the term chiropractic assistant, unless the person is working under the supervision of a doctor of chiropractic pursuant to this chapter and rules adopted by the board. Those were the main ones that I wanted to revisit. In addition to that, and I'm not sure if this made it into the packet, but I wanted to point out Article 11, chiropractic assistant. Reference if you want to write this down, R4-7-1102, chiropractic assistant training. A chiropractic assistant shall complete 24 clock hours of coursework with a minimum of 4 hours in each of the following subjects: chiropractic principles, management of common disease, history taking, record keeping, professional standards of conduct, and CPR. If a chiropractor supervising a chiropractic assistant is certified in physiotherapy under ARS 32-922.02, the chiropractic assistant shall complete 12 hours of training in physiotherapy in addition to the 24 hours of coursework. If a chiropractor supervising a CA is certified in acupuncture under ARS 32-922.02, the CA shall complete 2 hours of training in acupuncture in addition to the 24 hours of coursework. Also, under R4-7-1102C, a chiropractor shall inform the board in writing that a chiropractor has employed a chiropractic assistant within 7 days of hiring the CA by submitting the name of the CA, the name and license number of the supervising chiropractor, the address and phone number where the CA is employed, and the initial date of hire. A CA shall begin board-approved coursework within 3 months of initial employment and with the supervising chiropractor, and shall complete all coursework within 1 year of initial employment with the supervising chiropractor. Now let's review our own ARS 32-4221. A, beginning July 1st, 2005, a person who wishes to engage in the practice of massage therapy must be licensed pursuant to this chapter and may submit an application for licensure pursuant to this chapter not sooner than the date prescribed by the board. No person may claim to be a massage therapist or use terms references in any advertisement, statement, or publication to suggest to the public that the person is a massage therapist unless that person is a massage therapist licensed pursuant to this chapter. A person who is not licensed pursuant to this chapter shall not use any of these titles or abbreviations or any other abbreviations or other words, letters, signs, or figures to indicate that the person is using the title, that the person using the title is licensed pursuant to this chapter. All of this being said, I would like to discuss with the board members. Many times recent graduates are being informed that they may work under the supervision of a chiropractor while waiting for their license to be approved. Oftentimes, it has not been divulged that if this was to happen, the individual needs to obtain a chiropractic assistant certification in order to do this legally, and yet they still may not refer to themselves as a massage therapist until they have actually received their license from this board. As I mentioned, as a chiropractic assistant, there is a time frame that training needs to happen in that 3 months to a year that they obtain the chiropractic assistant certification. In addition, a chiropractic assistant who meets the requirements of physiotherapy under R4-1102, they may administer massage therapy and hot and cold applications under the direct supervision of a chiropractor in physiotherapy, and that is if the chiropractor supervising a chiropractic assistant is certified in physiotherapy under ARS 32-922.02. Phew. Board members. I would like to open the floor for you to help me discuss this, see if it was clear, if there's any questions. And particularly, Board Member Tapscott, you might be familiar with this being in the educational setting. What is your take on this information?
Wow. So great job, by the way. That's a lot. I have always questioned this practice. To me, it is I don't understand how the chiropractic license can somehow encroach into the massage license. You know, I feel like they're saying, yeah, that's fine by us, but it doesn't matter if it's fine by them. It matters if it's fine by the massage licensing regulations. And currently, for a fact, massage therapists, the unlicensed massage students and such get hired by chiropractors who do massage. They advertise massage in the chiropractic office, and an unlicensed massage therapist does it with the belief that it's okay because it's underneath the supervision of the chiropractor. That's a whole other can of worms there, too. I don't know what supervision means. They're definitely not sitting in the room while the massage is going on, but they are in the office. Anyway, I think it kind of undermines the whole idea of having licensed massage therapists. I'm against it for that reason, but I don't even understand how they have the authority to do it in the first place. And I understand their licensure and their statutes allow it, but they shouldn't supersede our statutes that say you can't perform massage without a license. That's my big concern about it. And yes, I've never gotten a clear answer because none of us have ever done what you've chosen to do, which I really appreciate. Open up this up for discussion and see where we legally stand on this.
Sure. So one of the things that I want to bring up and kind of piggyback on what you said is that a lot of times most industry professionals believe that this can happen very regularly. And it was always, it's always been this loophole that a lot of folks like, we don't like this. From what I've gathered from the Chiropractic Board ARS and our own, it is stating that one cannot perform massage therapy legally under the supervision of a chiropractor unless they have the training as a chiropractic assistant, which has to be done within a certain period of time. So it's no longer somebody advertising on Craigslist that they're hiring for a massage therapist and there's no training needed. In fact, there is training that needs to be that needs to happen. And at the same time, while one is waiting for their massage therapy license, they are to be referred to as a chiropractic assistant and only perform the duties that a chiropractic assistant can perform, and not necessarily refer to themselves as massage therapists, as according to our unlawful practice classification, civil penalties, and injunction relief. And this primarily why I wanted to bring it up, because there's a lot of confusion, a lot of discussion around the rules of chiropractic work and massage therapists working under the supervision of a chiropractor. The chiropractor does need to be in the building at the time that the chiropractic assistant duties are being performed. And sometimes that may include some soft tissue work, but they have to have that certification.
Yeah, my other concern, if I can add further, is kind of a public safety concern. And I don't mean that I don't trust chiropractors to keep their patients safe. I do. I don't want to be misquoted there. But let's suppose there is a problem that occurs. Whose jurisdiction does that problem fall under? They're not a massage therapist. And yet they're performing massage. And I think that's a big danger, just from a legal point of view, that we have anybody performing massage and claiming it's massage who's not a licensed massage therapist, because they fall into this gray area that I don't think is good for the public at all. And that definitely is currently going on. So yes, I agree with you.
I think that would fall under the chiropractor would be liable for that. Obviously, they're not licensed by our board, so it's not our jurisdiction. If they're not following their own board rules by indicating to their board that they've hired a chiropractic assistant and given all the information within the 10 days, like most boards do, that could potentially hurt their business, their chiropractic license too. So this is an information, the more you know, hopefully informing massage therapists of this information will also help them inform maybe chiropractors that aren't following their rules and regulations of their board as well.
So do you interpret this that a chiropractor, regardless whether they're a chiropractic assistant or not, cannot advertise that they're providing massage with an unlicensed massage therapist? And that's how I interpret it.
That is my interpretation as well. When you compare their Arizona rules and statutes with our Arizona rules and statutes, that is how I am interpreting it. Vice Chair Bruce, do you have anything that you would like to add or add to this discussion? Any questions?
Yeah, admittedly, this was definitely more educational for me. I didn't know all the nuances of how, what was happening, but I think that the best thing that you did was really clarify. And my understanding of it was really the same as that they need to be a chiropractic assistant and working. My understanding was within the first year getting their chiropractor licensing. And so it really seems like a short-lived position. And so these would be massage therapists who have graduated from school or just waiting for their license who are typically moving into these positions that you guys are seeing. And
yes.
So, okay. So it is kind of a short-term thing for them until they get their license, and then they'll go work for them under their license.
Correct. And yes, and so a lot of times with the challenge of waiting for the licensing, the massage license to become active, you know, and wanting to make some money, the loophole, I call it a loophole, has always been you can work under the supervision of a chiropractor. In addition to that, what we call a loophole, there are some stipulations, and those stipulations have not been very well known. A lot of times people just say, oh, let's go work for a chiropractor. The problem is that they're not necessarily always getting the chiropractic assistant certification that needs to go along with that for, in order for that to happen legitimately. Board Member Tapscott.
Yeah, and I can just add, my concern is, Vice Chair DeRoos, you're right, that in general, these are massage students or people waiting on their massage license. But that's not in the requirements. Once you can work under a chiropractor, it doesn't say you can work under a chiropractor if you're a student or waiting on your license. You can just work under a chiropractor. I mean, I think that's a pretty bold thing to be able to do with 24 hours of training when we all of a sudden claim you need 700 hours. And that's a big difference. Yeah.
Yes, it is. And I agree with you. So I think that, maybe reading this again more thoroughly in our spare time, and understanding, where the chiropractic board, rules and regulations are and comparing them to ours, I think that it opens up an opportunity for more communication, even with other boards, whether it be chiropractic, whether it be physical therapy, to make sure that we're all on the same page. I know that Director Overton had mentioned in previous meetings, just for the purpose of communication, having a database within these boards that, you know, indicates if somebody's license hunting, where they've been reprimanded from one board, maybe had their license revoked, and now they're going to a different board to get a license. And there's no database that connects, somebody, hypothetically speaking, who maybe has had their physical therapy license revoked and is now seeking massage therapy license. So it's something to consider. I think, having that communication once again, but definitely an educational moment for our board and for people who are on the call. Is there anything else that needs to be added regarding this topic?
Madam Chair, did you want to offer an opportunity for the Assistant Attorney General representative to weigh in or indicate at a later time she'll weigh in? But
100%, yes. And that's where I was actually going to go next after I had the opportunity to let the board members speak. The Assistant Attorney General's Office, Dean Galvin and Casey Hutchison, do you have anything that you would like to add to this discussion?
If the board has any legal questions, I think we'd be happy to provide legal advice in the executive session, but I'm hesitant to comment in the public session, creates an impression of giving legal advice to anyone else.
Of course. I don't have any questions from a legal standpoint. This is purely citing the ARS from the chiropractic board and comparing them to the massage therapy board's ARS and interpretation from the board members at this time. Purely for educational purposes. And Jean, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Only if you have questions, and I echo Casey's sentiment about executive session and responding to your specific questions for legal advice.
Thank you. I don't have any questions at this time. Board Member Tapscott, Vice Chair DeRoos, do you have any?
Board Member Tapscott, I would like to go into executive session. I would request we do that.
Okay, please go ahead and make your motion.
I motion that we go into executive session.
I second that motion. And we'll do a voice vote.
Madam Chair, you can just say all in favor, please indicate by saying aye, and then any opposed. And
all in favor, all three of us say aye.
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 Okay.
Okay.
If you give me just a moment, Madam Chair and board members, to set up. I didn't have one set up for this morning, but let me set that up and include the AGs as well. Just a moment.
Wonderful. All those, the rest of you that are on the call, you may remain in the boardroom while we exit to executive session. We will return shortly. It is 9:48 on Monday, November 7th, and we are back from executive session. Board members, I would like to continue our open discussion regarding the chiropractic ARS, and I'm comparing it to the massage therapy ARS. Board Member Tapscott, do you have anything that you would like to openly address?
Yep, thank you, Shirley. My concern is a misunderstanding, I think, at least between this board and at least some members, some chiropractors, and massage therapists too, and licensed and unlicensed massage therapists, those waiting licenses and such. And my concern is the use really of the word massage, which is legally in our purview as the massage therapy board. And my concern is any misunderstanding, which you've tried to clear up today. And I really appreciate that. But I think just reaching out to the chiropractic board and association, and letting them know our interpretation of the use of the legal use of the word, and practice of massage therapy, and that it must be done by a licensed massage therapist, would be very helpful. I don't think anybody has poor intentions here, but my big concern too is without this clarification, it's not so much the chiropractor I'm concerned about, it's the potential massage therapist. You know, it can be caught between these different interpretations of the law. And I would not want anybody to do anything to jeopardize their getting licensed legally or having a ding on their record and such because they practice without a license. And so I would recommend our first step would be to write a formal letter, assuming the rest of the board here agrees, to the chiropractic board, asking that they refrain from the use of and practice of massage therapy by anybody who's unlicensed, regardless of whether it's being supervised or not.
I like that. I think that it's a wonderful idea. I think that it also may have, one, it's going to be an opportunity to communicate with other health boards and open up that communication that we really desperately need to have better optics for the massage therapy industry as a whole. Communicating with other boards that, you know, provide services to the public that are somewhat similar to ours. It also may help close this loophole of people who believe that they don't need a license at all to touch. Working under somebody else's license and not get in trouble for it. It's a mess. I know that Board Member Tapscott, you probably see it quite a bit. I know I see it quite a bit with both of us being in the industry. So I agree with you. I think that it would be wise for us to instruct the board staff to create a formal letter to the chiropractic board and see if we can get on the same page with our rules and regulations.
This is Board Member DeRoos, and I agree with you. I think it also allows them the opportunity through a letter to respond to it, to kind of think about the response, to be coordinated in our efforts. So I think it's a great approach. I agree.
Wonderful. Yes, Board Member Tapscott.
I just want to thank Vice Chair DeRoos for that comment, coordinated in our efforts. This is not us against them. It's just, yeah. It's clarifying the law and coordinating our efforts and our jurisdictions.
Yes.
Thank you.
Agreed. Would you like to, do we need, Assistant Attorney General's Office, do we need to create a motion for this to take place? Okay, so I'm going to leave that to Board Member Tapscott, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all, thank you. This is Board Member Tapscott. I motion that we write a letter to the Chiropractic Board and the Chiropractic Association clarifying our position on the use of the word massage therapy and that it should only be utilized and performed by licensed massage therapists, and that we eagerly await their response and their stance on that.
I second that motion. And we can do a voice vote just by unmuting and agreeing.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. So, board staff, primarily Executive Director Augerton, you are so good with words. We can maybe task you with that.
Sure. Madam Chair and board members, I'll get you and the AG's office a draft this week. And after you have a chance to review and suggest edits, we can send it out this week as well.
Right. Item number 8 on our agenda, issuing credit our last meeting, discussion, review, and possible action on changing the State Board's current policy for providing 3 hours of continuing education credit for licensees attending a board meeting. This change, the discussion, is to change it from once per licensing period to one each calendar year. This would provide a potential for 6 continuing education hours per licensing period of the required 24 hours, but it cannot be considered in-classroom hours. So it would be part of that online training. I think that as we're discussing this too, it should be known that because the board itself is not an approved provider of continuing education hours by NCBTMB or FSMTB, that these hours can only count for the state license renewal and cannot be used for NCBTMB certification renewals or for the renewal of their memberships with AMTA or ABMP, and I know this because I tried it, or any other organization that requires proof of CE hours unless they specify that they will accept them. So I'd like to open up the floor, the virtual floor, for discussion. Let's begin with Board Member Tapscott, since this is something that you wanted to introduce.
Thank you, Chair Ryder. And thank you for framing the discussion so clearly. We are talking about online educational hours only applicable to your Arizona massage license renewal. And the reason I brought it up was how informative I have found sitting on this board to be. And I don't mean because I am privy to some information the public is not privy to. I'm not, really. You hear everything we hear. But I have learned more from that than my entire, 30 years in the industry here in Arizona. And I would, I wish people would attend almost every meeting. I would be a proponent of allowing 12 hours of online, because my experience of online education has, the board meetings have been definitely equal to those, if not superior, and much more important to informing me as a massage therapist in Arizona. And I have to say that I'm arguing something against my own interest. In my actual job, we're working on an online course that would bring money to our school, and this would take away from that, and I still am a strong believer in it, because we want lots of public participation, and we want to dispel myths and all that kind of thing, and I think 3 hours a year is the bare minimum for that. Again, I would argue you should be able to attend 4 meetings and get your 12 hours, and again, in the way you framed it, though, Chair Ryder, that just for your Arizona massage license. It's just for that license renewal. We're not suggesting it's true continuing ed that can apply to other states or to your national certifications or anything like that. We're not stepping outside of our bounds in that sense.
Thank you. Board Member DeRoots, Vice Chair.
Thank you. This has definitely been an educational opportunity for me as well, and I'm not even in the industry, so I would support the 12 hours, or 6 hours, sorry, we're saying 6 hours, right? Three each year?
Correct.
Is really what was being promoted. I would support that. I think that there is a lot of information that is given that is very relevant and encourage people to come to this even more often, but I support that, absolutely.
Thank you. I also support an additional 3 hours, so 3 hours each year during their licensing period. I think it's an opportunity not only to learn more about the massage therapy industry from the board's jurisdiction and what we're capable of doing, but it empowers people to get involved with their industry more often than they are currently. Since I've been on the board, I've noticed a bit of a shift as far as interest. And I think part of that is because of the industry professionals that do sit on the board, that we talk a lot. We have the ability to talk to lots of people at one time, whether it's in a classroom setting, whether it's on social media. And I just think that, that overall, it would benefit our industry to have more people involved in the actual board proceedings, what we do on a monthly basis. And I like the idea. I like the idea of changing it from just the 3 hours to 3 hours per year. Board Member Tapscott.
Just two additional comments. One is, I think some of that change on the board, actually, Chair Ryder, is because of you. And I really mean that. You've chosen to bring on guest speakers and to bring up topics that we may or may not even vote on, but just to inform all of us about and to challenge our ways of thinking. I think it's a very different board. And I think this furthers that mission that you have initiated here. And my only second comment here is that, just for simplicity's sake, instead of saying 3 hours per year, I think we might want to say 6 hours per licensing period, so that we're not tracking what year they took it in and what a year means, you know, because the license renews on June. Does that mean between June and next June they have to do 3 hours, and the June after that 3 hours, but they did it in May? You know, I think we say 6 hours and keep it simple, just for public clarity.
I think that's a wonderful point that you've just brought up. It would certainly help the board staff not have to give them more work to do. I like it. I like it. Yes.
And I'm sorry, but since we are providing public clarity, I believe what we're all discussing here is you still have the 24-hour requirement, every licensing period of 2 years that you must complete, 12 hours must be in person. More can be in person, but 12 hours must be in person. Up to 12 hours can be online. Half of those 12 hours, 6 hours, could be by attending two board meetings.
Yes, that is what I am
understanding. Outline the whole thing, yeah.
Yes, that is my that is a wonderful way to clarify it. I would like to have you please go ahead and create a motion. If there are no more questions, but before we do a motion, I do want to defer to the Assistant Attorney General's office to see if there's anything that we need to be concerned about with this policy, or creating a motion to move forward in changing our policy.
I don't believe so. I don't have anything.
I don't either. I'd be happy to review the current policy and any revisions to it. And I don't recall if you have those specific guidelines or requirements in rule about the 24 hours, 12 have to be in person. Are those in rule?
Madam Chair, would you like me to answer that?
Yes, please, Director Overton.
Well, Madam Chair and Jean, the statute indicates the 24 hours, and under the administrative code, there's the definition for there was a reprieve under COVID for 24 months, but there is the requirement, and that's again on the website as well. And in, on the website, we've even identified the definition of what's considered in classroom in-person training.
Okay. So we can take a look at that more closely, but in the interim, I think it's you develop a policy set out by Mr. Tapscott that would be sufficient. Maybe down the road, we need to clarify the rules, but adopting an interim policy or substantive policy statement would be sufficient.
Thank you for that. Board Member Tapscott, would you like to create a motion regarding continuing education credits?
I would. Thank you, Chair Ryder. This is Board Member Tapscott. I motion that we allow 6 hours of your continuing online education to be able to be fulfilled by attending 2 board meetings.
Do you want to clarify regularly scheduled board meetings? There may be a time that we may have to hold an emergency meeting if there's a problem that needs to be addressed immediately, and that may only last, 30 minutes or half hour. So is it 6 hours of any regularly scheduled board meeting?
It is. Would you like me to restate the motion? I'd be happy to.
I think we've just included that.
Okay. Yes.
And this is Vice Chair DeRoost, and I second that motion.
And can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Ogerton?
Sure. Council Member Tapscott?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I meant Board Member Tapscott. Apologize.
I appreciate the promotion.
Vice Chair DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
3 ayes, 2 unfilled.
The motion passes.
And just briefly, for clarity's sake and for the record, that would be an amendment to R4-15-302, subsection 6.
Yeah, I think the policy currently, and then we would need to work on eventually amending that rule.
Correct.
Thank you. All right. Item number 9, just as we're moving forward, people on the call, unless you're testifying during a case, we're not taking raised hands or if it's like a call to public. So at this time, we're only conducting board business. I've seen a hand go up a couple of times. Item number 9 on the agenda, Arizona State Licensing is digital reminder of board licensing procedures. All right. So, what I want to bring up with this is that at some point in the very near future, our database is going to be 100% online applications with initials, renewals, many boards, if not almost all boards besides our own, only have the ability to provide online digital applications for renewals. That being said, I want to defer to our license processor, if he is willing, to confirm first what documents can be uploaded on our current applications for initial applications and then renewal. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because there's applications are coming from all different directions, and it needs to be streamlined, effective immediately, because there's a lot of things, perhaps maybe getting lost in the mailroom. And it's just easier if everything is all in one place. So the majority of these applications are being done online. But there are some pieces of the application that need to be mailed in, such as a fingerprint card, such as transcripts coming from the school. So what I'm thinking is that I know that in the past, with initial applications, schools have not only submitted transcripts, but they've submitted the applications and the passport quality photos and such in a packet. So I want to be really clear, either with board staff, Executive Director Tom Augerton, or from Tony Wilcox, our amazing one licensed processor, do everything online person. What are the expectations? What would make it easier to process licenses when receiving them online? And what are the only things that need to be mailed? Yes, Tony, there's Tony.
I was waiting because I wasn't sure if I was going to answer or the director. So I'm going to volunteer all of it. And let's start with, there's two things that, and this doesn't matter if I'm talking to a school or to any kind of public person that wants to get it. It doesn't matter if they're here, a different state, all of it's the same. It is online right now. We have initials and renewals and address changes and everything that you need to do. So if you have a name change, and I'll go, it's not going to take me very long to go over all of it right now. So I'll start with initials. Initials, you're in a different state. I'm going to take that one as a hard one first. So the first thing they do is they would pay, which is with a credit card online, and then it emails them a receipt. Now, that receipt is going to have two things to it because it emails it to them. One is an authorization number, and then the other one is it gives them a copy that they could download of the receipt. If they've done that, that's half the battle. But, and I'm saying this generally because renewals do the same thing. People stop there. They think they're done. They say, oh, I already did my initial, or I did my renewal. How come I don't have a license? You made a payment. I don't know anything about you. So then I move to my next step, and I'm not really being mean to public when I say this. They will take and print out the online that is screenshots, very poor quality screenshots, and then they white out the area where there's a social, saying, I'm not giving you a social. I can't accept that. This form is a affidavit that's a legal document that we enter into our records of you applying. When you white out the most critical areas, then it doesn't exist. So now we'll get back to the how do you know what to do? Well, we have the system right now is using Adobe, and Adobe guides us piece by piece of what you need to do. Don't overthink this. A lot of people scoot down with their arrow and their screen going, oh, I'm not going to put my address. There's little red asterisks. That's the ones you have to fill out. This means you can totally skip sections like a work, a business, or other mailing options. It makes the form so it's only half as big as you think it is. It's really, and then there's yes-no questions. If you've ever had a felony, it's going to depend on which one of those are. Wow, that's another 20 questions that you just, well, I haven't killed anybody. So then they just put no's on everything. If they have done something wrong, there is a section that says click and upload the documents from the court. It doesn't mean you're going to not get a license because you drove with your kids without seatbelts, which is, yes, that is actually something that people do. And they get a felony out of that because it was unbuckled minor. So I'm trying to make a discern that just because you had a problem doesn't mean you're going to not get a license. It just means we've got the options to attach. And now I'm going to go through the quick attachments. Give me a copy of your driver's license. There's a little gold star on it. Well, hey, that's what's my federal ID? I don't care about anything else. Oh, if you got a passport, that's awesome. You don't have to do both, but you can do either one of those. And the things like your photo, attach that. How do I take a photo? You use your phone. Just take your phone, take a picture of yourself or have your friend take it. And then it'll save and you'll have a copy. You can attach, so you attach the receipt, you attach your photo, you attach your driver's license or your passport, and all these things you can take with your camera on your phone. You don't have to go, oh, I got to go copy something from some scanning thing. I don't know where to go. You don't have to go anywhere. It's very generic in whatever state you're in. Then at that point, it'll say, attach your copy of your receipt, type in the authorization number, which is on that receipt as well, and you go, it didn't submit. It didn't pop up at the bottom and say, submit. There's an arrow on the left that is yellow. If you click that, it will take you right back to the one that you missed, which is going to be a red asterisk, and it's going to say, you didn't put the city. A lot of people, and I'm again clarifying, a city is not your street address. People don't get that. They put where it says, what's my address? They put their name. Where it says, what city are you in? Like, I'm in Phoenix or I'm in California or wherever they're at. They will put the street address there. That's not going to work. That's not a real thing. Now, the system, we have it automated. So if you put in, here's my birthday, it tells you how to do it. If you don't do it right, it says, no, I want month/day/year. And it shows an example. The same thing with the zip code and phone numbers. They all prompt you on how you're supposed to do it. So if you do it wrong, you know right away. And if you go all the way to the bottom, again, just hit that yellow arrow. That yellow arrow will tell you where things are wrong. And you go all the way back to the bottom. Oh, now once there's a red pop-up with an arrow pointing down saying, click here to sign. You click that, you don't have to sign. You don't have to be a fancy penmanship person. It will say, do you want to draw it? You can draw it if you want, or you can click type it, and then it makes a nice cursive, pretty signature of your name, and you click sign, and it says, okay, I have sent a verification to you that you have to acknowledge before I will move this form forward to processing. They go to their email that they put in, the email address that they put on this form, and it goes, this is from Adobe, and it shows a box saying, this is one more step, and there's a blue underline on the right side, and I'm trying to describe this in best ways to see things. First, the best thing is do a computer. It doesn't matter if it's a laptop or a desktop or a Mac or a Wii. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter the browser. If it's on a computer or desktop or laptop, it's going to be the easiest to see. If you're trying to use a phone or a tablet, you're going to have to scroll a bit, and it's going to be hard. You're going to get lost because this prompt that says, now click this blue underline to verify this email address is really you, and you have really asked for it, then once they click that, it says, you're all done. They get a copy of everything they've submitted, and as well as me. And so that's the nice part. Now here comes, well, now what do I do? Well, at that point, you would get an email saying, I now need a FD-258 inked fingerprint card mailed to me, plus anything else they've not done. So if they've not got a level one yet, they'll get the email. It'll all be listed in that email. I need a level one clearance card. Doesn't matter really if it's IVP or non-IVP, because that is all, I don't really want to talk about that because that is not us. That is DPS that goes through all that. All we do is point them to go to the DPS people. Talk to the DPS people, what they want, where they want you to go, what they want you to pay. You don't pay us, which is another story. People send us a DPS form with a DPS address and a money. Here's some cash. I don't want your cash, and I don't want your DPS envelope and address. I don't know how they got our address to put that on because we don't ever tell them mail it to us. And that, and then of course there's the other hand, people trying to be really kind, so they give us the official letter and the real plastic credit card from DPS, which then I just have to send it back to them saying, "Hi, here's your card back." Just a photo of it would have been fine, which again, I'll get back to if, let's say they forgot, they didn't have it yet. You can still apply. You'll get my little note saying that you forgot something and what it was. You forgot your photo. You forgot the DPS card. They could email that to our info at massageport.az.gov. And then I'll take it from there. It's not a physical, I got to mail in everything. Really, the only thing I need you to mail is the inked fingerprint card. The rest of it is all online, and it's all in your initial application. Now, I'm speaking again, this is for any person, any state, anywhere that wants an initial license. Right now, we're currently handling things with schools a little different, and this was for informativeness to the school, so the school knows what's going on. So as soon as we get something, and again, I'm not generalizing that they do this, they would give us something. And what we have is Paul that does a checklist. He goes down everything that has came in from this school. And I'm going to use a name. Let's say there's a person named Tony that applies. Well, Tony applies, and it came from the school. The school did the whole thing. They did the online or whatever they needed to do, and they sent it in. If they didn't do something, our checklist will tell them what they did not do. So it'll say, you did not give us ID. We didn't get a passport, or we didn't get a driver's license. So we don't know that this person's official. And that, so the school gets the checklist back, and if something's missing, it's listed on the checklist. Now that checklist didn't just leave. What I did is I take the checklist when he's done, as well as everything that's came in, and that's all merged into their file. So it's never lost, which now I'm going to go into the when things get lost. I will say, see, the things that are not part of the applicant, let's say they need to give us an official transcript. That is, they contact their school. And this doesn't matter what school it is in what state. It is still up to the school to send that. I do not require the school to send everything physically. So I accept transcripts from all over, all schools. They just send it to info. And then because they'll say, my student Tony, blah, blah, here's the attached transcript. Well, the first thing is it real? Well, of course it is, because I know what they sent from. The email tracking shows me exactly who sent it and what it is, and I'm going to recognize that's an official school email anyway. And so I know this is the real deal, and if I have a question, I'll go back to that. I'm going to stop because I think Angela has something to say.
I actually don't have something to say, but Board Member Tapscott does.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so, by the way, thank you, by the way. I've seen many of these forms, and I agree with you. I think the system is very well structured, right? You fill out what it says and you upload what it says to upload, and it works really well. Do you prefer transcripts to come via email as opposed to snail mail, or do you not have a preference?
Oh, I enjoy everything electronic. So
cool.
The reason I say that is this person, and I'm using just my first name as an example. If Tony has a transcript that's been sent in, I can find that transcript very easy if it's electronic, because I try, not the whole name, I just use like the first name Tony or the last name of it. I don't go by what school it is. I don't go by the applicant's email or anything like that. Because that way, because many people from different, work at the same school, but there's several contacts that email us, I don't care which one. I see they're all official emails, and I know where they came from. So whichever one sent me Tony, I got it. And then I'll put it, as soon as I get that, I put it in their filing system, and I change what's missing. so they don't get the same message over again and again of, well, I never got this, right? I got this. And again, I love schools. I don't have any problem with schools. I think what happens, and this is just my general opinion, which doesn't mean anything, but that is someone does an application and they either have said, well, I already sent that. Well, if you send a transcript before you exist, that doesn't help me at all, because now I have something. We are not a record keeping system. We don't hold transcripts. We don't give transcripts to anybody else. That is only the school's business, and they're the official people to give out things, not us. Because I get a lot of that of, hey, I'm moving to Oregon. Give me a copy of my transcript because you have it. No, we don't give out anything. We only give out a verification that shows you didn't have discipline. And that's it. That's all we can do for you. And so the schools, I think, are getting a call, we'll say, or a contact from an applicant that says, you did it. I saw you email it to them or whatever, and the board lost it. We wouldn't have this conversation if it was emailed, because for every email or contact or call that the school gets, I've got 20. The same person has found their little cell phone and they go, send, that you lost my stuff. I'm going to the governor. I get more flack for something that was not anything that we lost. It was just, that's just the way they're angry and they want to cuss someone. And I'm sure they call these wonderful schools that are doing very nice for people. They're helpers. They're helping. So why are you yelling at school? Because then the school intern now sends me another what's the story question. And I'm like, I already took care of that. They've already, I'm waiting, and my standard, you know, and I'm not blaming the school for this, but my standard answer to most are, everything's done. I'm waiting for the federal investigators to give me back the results of your inked fingerprint card that you mailed in. And that is not our timeline. That timeline is, as soon as I get it, it's put in the system, and then it is sent by our investigator to the federal investigators, and that's a 90-day wait. That is not us. And I get an email every day from the same person. I'm going to use the word Tony again. Tony will email me every day saying, what's the status of my license? What's the status of my license? We really try to say, got 90 days. It's not up to us. Well, I need this now because I've already got a job. I'm sorry you've already got a job. We didn't tell you to do that. We only tell you what's wrong, and we tell you what you need to do to fix it. And it's really not as hard as they make it out to be. If they need to, and I'm going to go into the, not a school now, I'm going back into coming from another state. I'm going to pick Oregon. If they're coming from Oregon and they have an Oregon license, they need to pick up their little license and look at the number on it and go, I need to contact the person on this license in Oregon and say, send a verification to Arizona Massage. Oregon knows what that means. They know what our email is. They might charge you. We don't charge anything for any of that. But maybe the Oregon people do. And then I will get the email from Oregon or anywhere that I need to do this. And I think I've covered more than I need to on initials. So now I'll quickly move to renewals. Renewals are the same idea. It guides you where you have to fill out, same address and all those things and how to do it. Then attach your copy of your CEs. And it's structured of, here's live, in here is online. Now, the person that doesn't understand, I need 12 hours of online, they're going to get one. And the same with live, one. That's why there's 12, because people do one at a time. And they ask, so yes, they can attach 24 forms of our official MCB authorized training providers. Now, of course, this could just be one file. If they went to a school and the school gave them CEs and says, this transcript's for 24 CEs, then they only have one document, and that's okay. I'm trying to give you the whole overview. I need, of course, another driver's license or passport showing you're still legal, and this could be a permanent resident card if you're out of the country that's just here, or if it's a person that is authorization to work, all those kind of outside, I'm not a United States citizen. Well, they attach that to their renewal. So, again, then they attach the receipt, and they submit for processing, and, of course, it goes through the same, we're verifying you really are the person to your email, and you have to okay it. Now I'm going to go through a couple, I'm almost done. I'm sorry, this is long-winded, but it's helpful information for any person doing anything. This girl named Tony, she just happens to be a girl, she got married, and her name is now a new name. Same idea. She goes to the website. She clicks on name change, which is all, it's all under forms. Forms is the middle box because there's three boxes, and the middle one is the grayest one, says forms. Click here. And then it drops down, and they're all there. You slide down to name change. You type in old name is, new name is, attach the court document. This means attach, you took a copy of your cell phone, and you took a picture of your marriage license. Or however you've got it from the court, attach that, submit, it verifies you're who you say you are, same process. I get it, your name's changed, it's free. I'm going to let any of the board members ask me any other questions because I've covered a lot of information very fast.
Board Member Tapscott, please go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Ryder. Thank you, Tony. You're a saint. So I was really thinking the whole time you're talking. And thank you for your patience with those of us in the industry. Because I think it takes a lot. So I'd like to summarize what you said, and please tell me if I'm saying something wrong. I want some takeaways for the public and for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
What I am hearing is, and I agree with and love, but what I am hearing is almost everything can be done online now and should be.
Yes.
Regardless,
yes.
I'm talking about regardless renewal, regardless of initial, it can be almost all done online except for the 258 card that actually has your fingerprints on it.
Right.
Okay, that has to be mailed in. That can't be scanned in. But everything else can be done online and should be. I'm also hearing that it's best if things are emailed to you because that creates a record for it. Again, that is online, so we're still following with that theme. And I'm hearing that most importantly for initial applications that you need to pay for and create an initial application before you start sending stuff to the board outside of that because it's not going to match up to a file anywhere. So if I send you a 258 card with my fingerprints on it, but you don't know who I am, that doesn't do you a lot of good. I should first pay for, fill out the online application, upload my non-IDP fingerprint clearance card, most likely my state ID, most likely a picture of myself and the receipt that I use to apply. And then you will have, and then I, by the way, submit that. It'll take me back to any places I missed on the form. Submit again, go to my email and verify the submission, and then at that point, things like a 258 fingerprint card can be mailed to you, and transcripts can be sent to you, hopefully electronically, because we've now created a file.
Yes. I'm going to touch on a couple more things that you made me think of. That is, when I get FD-258 ink fingerprint cards, it's got prints on it. Well, how about who you are? I'd like to know your address because those things on the side, and I'm not blaming whoever rolled the prints because they're supposed to say, I'm putting a social here. Card with no social, card with no address. Guess what? I can't mail it back to you if you send something with no address on it. Because if I get a card I don't need, a lot of people will send more than one, or they'll send it in the renewal. I don't want it in your renewal, so I send it back to you. You paid for that thing, so I'm sending it back to you so you can, I don't know what, but I don't need it. So that's one of the keys is I'd like you to fill out the sections on the SB-258 of your name, where you live, the address, and please print. I'll just say it's much better if I can print it, because a lot of places, and I'm not saying who does it because I don't know, some of them come in typed on already. So they've got a nice social, it's crisp, the name and address is crisp, and I don't know who does that, so I'm not saying it's a person. Maybe it's the place that they're going. I'm not sure. But I do know our renewals also don't understand a lot about what to do. They will pay and they think they're done because I got a receipt. So how come I've lost my license has expired? Well, they've waited 8 to 10 months, almost a year, before they've gone, well, how come I didn't get? Well, because you haven't done an application. And they're saying, I'm not going to pay again. I didn't ask you to pay again. You have a receipt. You have an authorization number. Just go do that form. Well, I shouldn't have to do CEs. That's not what the form says. The form says you have to do CEs, attach them, and such. A lot of them simply don't want to do the renewal application or any kind of application. So I will get 28 emails from the same person with one attachment of, here's my one CE. And then here's another email, here's one CE. Another email, here's one CE. That is incredibly wasteful, because I'm going to forget one of them. I'm not intending to, and it's not intending the loss, but when you send 28 emails for renewal, that really is hampering the process for you and every other member that's waiting in line. So a lot of them, I will say, hey, you've please go do it online. Your 28 attachments in one email, it should be on the form, because I still need that form. And the other thing is, let's do I'm going to go back to initial. A lot of them don't understand what I'm asking for. Just because I say driver's license or passport, you know what that means, doesn't mean they do. So I'll get an initial application with a receipt number, who they are, email address, and 12 copies of their photo attached to that initial application. I am fine with that. It sounds crazy, but I'm fine, because they did two things, initial application and payment. And now I have them to put in the system, and then I can give them a list of what they forgot or how they need to get it to me. But see, that's where I started with the first key things are payment and the initial application, because then it starts you in the system, and we can go from there. We can work from there. We can work with anything from there. So any questions from the board or the chair?
I actually have a question when it comes to the schools emailing you the transcripts.
Yes.
I'm thinking that it would be best if you just sent the one transcript for Tony versus all 20 graduates that have, do you know where I'm going? So I do. Subject line, it says, transcripts, Tony, and attach those transcripts, not graduating class number 26, and you have 26 sets of transcripts in that one email. It's going to be easier for you to find transcripts for Tony.
Right.
By doing a search in the email, correct?
Right. That is wonderful to bring that up. I wasn't trying to bash on the schools, but yes, some schools have done that. They will send one file, one attachment in an email that says graduation students and a date. And I don't know who it is, and I can't search for it until I download it. And when I download it, I've got 30 students in there that I didn't know about. And I'm thinking that's going to be cleared up, because when we do the checklist, we are verifying who we got, what we forgot, or didn't get there, or however. And they have the opportunity then to email that student that they, oh, I forgot the transcript. That's fine. Just email. And then we'll take care of it from there. I'm going to go a little off from what we talked about as well, and that's with the mailroom. Mailroom is not us. It is not in our building. It's a state mailroom. So it comes in, and I get a lot of email content saying, you got it. You got my application on this day. I saw Butterfingers.org had signed for it. No, Butterfingers doesn't work for us. That is a state mailroom, and it passes from that first mailroom through three additional mailrooms, and then it finally gets to us, which is why we say, if you say it was delivered today, I won't see it till next week. It's just not, that's not how the thing works, because we never initially get it. The other one is, well, I'm coming down there and I'm going to straighten you out. So they come down physically in the office and they yell at a not massage board person that's just there to take things. They're there to receive. And again, bless their hearts at the schools. Some of the schools bring things in, and they'll bring in, I love it, they bring in a stack of 10 at a time, already organized. You know, the first one is all James. The second one is all Jeff. Third one is all Jill. It's all organized, so wonderful, because then as soon as they get those, which it does take a few days, but the first priority is get that checklist done and back to them that they know exactly we got it and everything that was attached. So, again, it's not faster if you're a school or slower. I'm just giving the little background of delay time, that I don't instantly get things. And if you get in your car and you race down there, I'm going to get it today. That's a misconception, that it'll happen that second as soon as you walk in. Well, I'm going to sit here until you hand me my license, which happens. They really have the idea that the person behind the window they're yelling at is a massage employee, and that I'm going to sit there until you give it to me. I'm not leaving. I'm sorry, that's not online. And if I tell and it's all over our website that we do online everything. So processing is all online. Things you've done is all online. And it doesn't mean it's any faster if you drive it down and hand it in person or mail it in. It's the same speed. It still goes through all those mail rooms before it gets to me. So I know that's a little convoluted, but I'm just trying to explain to the public, it's not that we hate anybody or that we want them to fail. Same with the schools. I'm just proud of the schools that they try to help us so much and give us a full packet of everything. That's wonderful. And they know right away when we've completed or if we need something else. I'm going to let you go back to Chair Ryder. Thank you for letting me explain so much. What would you like?
Tony, I think that was so wonderful that you shared all of that information, and it's recorded. People can review it at their leisure. Ultimately, at some point, our database is going to be 100% online, and people will have to do it online anyway. So we might as well get people ready for it now by saying, hey, all of this is online. This is the expectations of, you have to submit everything online. And at some point, we might be even saying, if you try to send this in an email, these 24 documents in an email rather than uploading it on the application as instructed, that it's going to be rejected because they're not doing it correctly. So I think this is a good preparation for when we do get this database going at some point, because other boards are already doing it, and there's no person to call and say, hey, I need help with this. They need to go online. They need to follow the instructions. And I'm going to repeat that. They need to follow the instructions on the application, because the majority of the people who are getting kicked back of, their license expiring or they're not getting what they need, is because of their own error, because they didn't follow the instructions. Tony, please go ahead.
Yes, that's everything they're doing is appreciated, and I'm hopefully the schools are hearing that. I'm never upset with the schools when they send their packets or their things. It's very nice, and I try to get their answers to them right away of what's completed or needed to be done. So appreciate everyone that's trying to help us so much. I want to touch a little bit on this going to the new system, even though that wasn't originally why you asked, but you brought it up.
Madam Chair. Tony, if you don't mind, let's defer this into your discussion.
Okay.
It's not relevant.
Okay, that's all I got.
Thank you so much, Tony. That was very informative. We do appreciate you and everything that you do. Let's move on to the next agenda item number 10, discussion, review, and possible action on reviewing and adapting model legislation for sponsorship and submission to the Arizona legislature for 2024 regular session to address new statutory language targeting human trafficking in Arizona-based massage. So, in speaking with several different anti-human trafficking organizations, there are some things that Arizona can obviously be doing better. I do want to preface this with that it's not the massage board's jurisdiction. However, human trafficking has infiltrated our industry very heavily, and so therefore I believe that we have a responsibility in, one, protecting the public, and if it involves getting in, being more engaged in anti-human trafficking efforts, then that's what we should be doing. Things that may stress how important it is that our industry does have regulations, and as well as the board, the importance of having a board that enforces those regulations to protect the public, that ignoring our board and industry and deeming it just not as important as other professions is unacceptable. I am proposing that the board consider supportive action in the near future, not if but when, for model legislation, sponsorship, and submission to the Arizona legislature when the 2024 regular session comes about to address new statutory language that targets human trafficking in Arizona-based massage therapy establishments. One specifically that I have been looking into, and we'll discuss this more in future agendas as well as in the advisory committee, is a landlord engagement program. And this program would hold landlords responsible for renting space out to folks who are conducting illicit businesses under the guise of massage therapy. We have a couple of organizations that we've already got scheduled on our agendas for next year, one for February and one for March. And some municipalities are already using a landlord engagement program. One of the things that has been mentioned to me previously is while it is a good idea to hold landlords accountable for allowing illicit activities to be happening under the guise of massage therapy, at times it has also deterred legitimate massage therapy practitioners from renting, not necessarily the individual massage therapist from renting, but the landlord themselves from renting to a legitimately practicing licensed massage therapist. And so that's where I want to kind of research where we may keep that from happening, because that's happening in other states where landlords are not allowing massage therapists to rent because they don't want to get in trouble just in case. But I would like to open the floor up to the board members currently on this particular topic to discuss where each of you and then we can be sure to revisit as it's appropriate. I was talking with Executive Director Tom Augerton, and we would like to get some kind of model language before the end of the year and have it approved and ready to go for next year.
This is Vice Chair DeRoost, and I mean, I definitely think that this is worth exploring a little bit more. I feel like I can look into it a little bit more. Is this the only kind of model legislation that you've seen out there? This is the one that you're kind of proposing, is the landlord engagement program? Are there other ones?
That's the only one that I'm looking at right now. It seems to be the most doable.
Yeah.
Just considering all of the bumps in the road and the hiccups that this board in particular has experienced, it might be the easiest one to gain traction on, with the public, with other, mm-hmm. People and politics, because it is human interest.
Yeah, I like the angle that you are coming at it, and it seems a little bit more tangible than maybe some more, I don't want to say more direct approaches, but that may take a little bit, they may be a little bit bigger impact and a little bit more political, but I would have to just look into a little bit more if that's the avenue, but I'm open to learning more.
This is Board Member Tapscott. Thank you for bringing this up, Chair Ryder. I think the key to solving any problem is getting to the root of it. And that's always, and Vice Chair DeRoost danced around this nicely. It's always a compromise between bureaucracy and how close you can get to that problem. But I think this is stepping in the right direction. And I think we'll be more effective. It makes more sense. And it's legislation that we've seen work other places. And while I hate for the onus to go on the landlord, I think it gets us closer to the source. I think one of the real things I would love to see is that you actually have to disclose who you are to open up a business, and then we could actually go after the business owners. They wouldn't just keep cropping up. That would be my perfect world. But at least we're marching in that direction, and I would definitely support that. And I think you're right, Chair Ryder, that this might not fall under our jurisdiction, but it does fall under our interest in the sense that it's not exactly that our industry has been infiltrated, it's that our name has been infiltrated, right? They're using the name of massage therapy. And for that reason, we should lay it in on this. And for the health of our industry and the health of the people we serve, I think it makes perfect sense to support legislation like this. And I would be very interested in pursuing that, depending on the language and all that kind of stuff. But yes, so thank you for bringing this up. I think we're heading in the right direction.
Wonderful. And very soon, hopefully we will have some draft language that we can perhaps meet before the end of the year to go over the language and perhaps discuss. And for that, I will actually defer to Director Augerton if you have anything that you would like to add to this topic of conversation.
No, Madam Chair, but the purpose of it on the agenda is useful to give me a sense of what the board would like to get additional research provided to them in a timely fashion. And then if we can meet virtually, depending on schedules, before the end of the calendar year, we can begin to work with stakeholder groups and the whole very lengthy public vetting process that goes with a proposal. Because really, proposing change of policy, as you probably have gathered after Tony's presentation, is a bureaucratic enterprise. But it begins with working with the executive branch, with the legislative branch, with all the stakeholder groups, the professional trade associations. If you're dealing with landlord-tenant, you're dealing with some specific trade associations and so forth. So it's kind of throwing a carrier pigeon in the wind and see where it ends up. But the one thing we can do is provide you a variety of a menu to look at with what other items have been attempted. Here in Arizona, many of the municipalities have been more involved and more assertive with changing codes with some varying degrees of success. And we can try to provide you with what, for example, has happened over in the East Valley with regard and what was attempted in Tucson with rewriting their legitimate massage business ordinance, which went through a 3-year process, but ultimately has stayed in the stalled status. But we'll get the research and give it to you kind of in a menu format provided to you in the next week and then give you an opportunity to take a look at it. And depending on schedule availability of everybody, we can do a single issue agenda and post it for the different.
Very good. That all being said, too, and on the same topic, I had mentioned that next year in February and in March, we have some presentations that will be taking place during our regularly scheduled board meeting. And in anticipation of those presentations, these presentations will also help provide specific data for Arizona on human trafficking, actual data on maybe how many actual licenses in Arizona for massage therapists are actually fraudulent and using the license for other activities. That being said, for anybody who is on the call, board members, anybody, I would like to ask everybody to invite other people to those board meetings to be trained and to get this information to the right people, law enforcement, investigators, political affiliates. The more people that know about this and take it seriously, the better chance we have of being able to facilitate some change. All right. Moving on. Boy, we just got a lot of information. How about we take a 5-minute comfort break before we move on to agenda item number 11? We'll take 5 minutes. It's 10:54 now, so let's just let's make it a straight 11 o'clock. Come back at 11 o'clock. We'll resume the meeting. And we are back in session. It is 11 a.m. on Monday, November 27th. We are on item number 11. Upon a vote of a majority of a quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspections, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained confidential by the state or federal law. First, we have our formal hearings, and I'm going to be deferring to our special investigator, David Elson. We remember at our last meeting that we had moved case number 23-044, Jiafeng Wang, massage therapist 26684, to a formal hearing. And my understanding was that the time between our last meeting and this meeting was not enough time for them to be properly notified with the 30 days. And so I understand that they have been notified, but the formal hearing, because there wasn't enough time in between meetings, that meeting, the formal hearing has to take place in January now, since we don't have a meeting scheduled for December. Investigator Elson, can you confirm?
I can. The complaint knows the hearings have gone out certified to Jiafeng Wang and Lisa Bao for the January meeting. They're out now, so it'll be well over 30 days.
Okay, so we do plan on here on having the formal hearings for case 23-044, Jiafeng Wang, massage therapist 26684, in January, as well as case number 23-018, Lisha Bao, massage therapist 27615.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that was fast. So now, moving on to our next agenda, same agenda item, but we're going to move to investigative reviews. So this could include possible cease and desist order or referral to local law enforcement. So this first case is 23-099, Willie David Bryant, massage therapist 19611, This is a preliminary investigation, an investigative review of the information available to the board at this time, and it is not a hearing. Is Willie David Bryant present at this meeting?
Present.
Thank you. And do you have legal counsel here with you today in this meeting?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Is the complainant B.A. or H.A. present in this meeting? I'm using your initials just for anonymity.
I'm here.
Thank you. Investigator Elson, can you please provide a summary of the complaint against Mr. Bryant?
Yes, Madam Chair. On November 2nd, 2023, the board received a complaint from VA filing on behalf of his wife, with whom he's currently separated. HA is listed as the client slash victim. He goes on to state that HA admitted to him to having a sexual relationship with respondent during massage sessions. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation. During the course of the investigation, both HA and the respondent adamantly denied that occurred. And just as an update to this case, I did receive a written response from the respondent in regards to this, and it was consistent with his verbal response.
Okay. Mr. Bryant, would you like to present any information at this time?
I don't believe so.
Thank you. And H.A., would you have any information that you would like to present at this time?
Other than the information is false, no.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions or care to discuss this case further at this time? Any questions for the complainant or the respondent?
This is Board Member Tascott. I don't have any questions. I have comments when you're ready.
Please go ahead with your comments at this time.
I mean, this would be concerning if it were true, but we have no evidence. This is third party hearsay. I don't think there's a case here.
Okay. Vice Chair DeRoost?
I agree with the evidence piece. I would say that if it is true, I still want to make the statement that it is an imbalance of power. There's professional boundaries that could potentially be crossed. It still feels valid to make that statement that whether or not they have enough evidence to, I just want to make that very clear that there's trust that comes with that and that professionalism that is a standard and that I just want to make sure that even if we're taking the opportunity to share that right now, even though we may not be able to move forward, at least I'm not sure that we can unless you guys have other questions. But I do want to make that statement. Sorry.
Thank you for that. While there are no unwritten rules regarding client-therapist relationships and romantic relationships, there are some ethical boundaries, as Vice Chair DeRoost has mentioned, but I don't see any violation. I would move to dismiss this case.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton?
Yes, Madam Chair. Vice Chair DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Three ayes.
The motion passes. This case is dismissed. Those on the call for this case, you are free to stay or leave. Thank you for coming. Thank you. All right. D on the agenda, license applications requiring public board review. Case number 23-094, Mark Perkins. Case 23-094 is a license application requiring public board review. Is Mark Perkins present in this meeting? And it appears that he is not. Senior Investigator David Elson, will you please provide a summary of this application that requires public board review?
Yes, Madam Chair. On July 11, 2023, applicant applied for his Arizona licensure through reciprocity. Applicant indicated that he had, on his application, he indicated he had received disciplinary action in the past in Connecticut on his Connecticut massage license. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation. I contacted the state of Connecticut and found that on April 11th, 2013, in case number 2012-1097, applicant was disciplined by order of a $3,000 civil penalty for practicing between October 31st, 2006 and April 11th, 2013 on an expired license. He paid the fine and is currently in good standings with Connecticut. Also, in his explanation to this, he mentioned he held a license in New York, but he didn't put it on the application. So I went to New York's Office of Professional Responsibility, and his license is current and active and good standing in New York with no disciplinary actions also.
Okay. Board members, do you have any comments or questions regarding this case?
This is Board Member Tapscott. So in looking over the application such, he disclosed all this information and everything we found out kind of confirms that, and he is back in good standing. And the issue was practicing without a license under another jurisdiction, correct? That's
correct. He got a civil penalty for practicing on an expired license.
Got it. And,
he has disciplinary action in another state, it requires the board to approve his license.
And this was resolved 10 years ago.
In 2012.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, my comment would be, I'm not overly concerned about a 10-year-old matter that has been resolved, and that's all.
Vice Chair DeRoos?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think he does have a longstanding holding a license, and being within good standing, and so it doesn't seem to be like this repetitive ongoing concern, and so I personally am not, I seem to be more in good standing than it is something that's going to be problematic from my point of view.
What would the board members think about if we were to move and grant licensure to also issue a letter of concern for the $3,000 civil penalty? That's just that it's in, that so that it's in there, it's not going to affect his licensure at all. But in the event that the individual fails to renew the license and practice once again for a period of time unlicensed, that there's record of that. Board Member Tapscott.
Yes, Chair Ryder. I just have a question, which is, do we have record of this, whether there's a letter of concern or not? Meaning, or is that the only way to create record of this? I do agree we should have record of this in case this issue comes up again. I'm not sure. I'm trying to decide whether a letter of concern is the way to do that.
Sure.
So maybe that's for board staff or.
Investigator Elson?
A letter of concern is non-disciplinary, and it creates a record to show a pattern if the pattern was to arise. And on the last part of the board options for consideration, the proposed letter of concern language is in there in the box.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I would agree with that approach, Chair Ryder.
And this is Vice Chair DeRoos, and I agree with the letter of concern. I support that. Yeah.
And this is Jean Gallen. I believe that at this point in the proceedings, it would have to be a consent for letter of concern, because this is not set for an investigative review or anything. So I don't believe it can just be issued. Casey, do you have a insight to that? Let me look.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular. I don't think we've done that before.
I think you're right, because the when it describes advisory letters, it's all in reference to an investigation.
So you could grant the application upon him entering or accepting a letter of concern for the past disciplinary action and practicing without a license.
Okay.
And if you fail to sign the consent agreement, then it would come back to the board. Or fail to sign the letter of concern, it would come back to the board.
Okay. Thank you for that.
I can give you some language for that if you want me to. For your motion?
Yes, please.
And, Dean, tell me if this is right. Based upon information presented at this meeting and contained in the investigative report, upon meeting all licensure requirements and signing a consent agreement for a letter of concern, grant licensure.
That would work, yes.
Okay. I'll see if I can remember all of that.
You could just say, so moved.
So moved. May I have a second?
And this is Vice Chair DeRuth, and I second that.
Call vote, please. You're muted.
Thank you. Sorry. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Vice Chair DeRuth?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
3 ayes.
The motion passes. And that concludes this particular application review. Our next application review is 23-102, Alia Jefferson, I apologize if I'm not pronouncing the name correctly. Case 23-102 is a license application review, public board review. Is Ms. Alia Jefferson present in this meeting?
Madam Chair, she wasn't going to come to the meeting.
Okay. Then, Investigator Elson, could you please provide a summary of this application that requires public board review?
During the course of the board's licensing process background check, it was discovered applicant has an active felony warrant for embezzle of an auto of $3,500 or more from the Las Vegas Nevada Metropolitan Police Department. Based on this information, the board conducted an investigation. Upon contacting the applicant and advising her of this, the investigation was pretty much done, and she requested to withdraw her application. And so we're bringing it to y'all to approve her withdrawing her application. That way, if she gets it cleared up, she doesn't have a conviction for a felony. It's just that she was wanted. That was the first time we've had one of these. She'll have to redo her application, including all fees to go along with it, since she's voluntarily withdrawing this one.
Understood. Any questions from the board members?
This is Jean Galvin. You may wish to consider the fact that if you allow her to withdraw, then you lose jurisdiction over her. And I understand that there is no conviction at this point, but she does appear to be evading another state's authority and jurisdiction. So allowing her just to withdraw, there's no record, at least at the national level, that she may be in the middle of some criminal activity or a criminal proceeding. You may wish to table the application, allow us to contact another state, the other state where this warrant has issued, and perhaps work with them. One, we could notify them what address we have that is being current, but it may be worth it to table this for a period of time to see if we can't follow the criminal proceedings a bit and see how they are resolved so we don't lose jurisdiction over her in the event that there is criminal activity for which she's ultimately held responsible.
That's a good piece of information. Thank you, Jean. Board members, what do you think?
This is Board Member Tapscott. I defer to the advice of counsel here. I think our job is to support other jurisdictions, and if holding on the applicant, at first I would have said let them withdraw the application, but I can see the wisdom in supporting law enforcement and other jurisdictions. I think that's an unspoken thing that we should be doing. So I would recommend that we table the application.
And advise staff to continue its investigation?
Yes, and allow staff to continue its investigation.
And Vice Chair DeRoos.
Thank you. I support, and I guess I defer to counsel as well for that. I agree.
I agree also. All right, then. I move to table this particular case for further investigation so that we may comply and coordinate with other law enforcement jurisdictions. At this time, at the advice of our counsel.
This is Board Member Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Yes, Madam Chair. Vice Chair DeRoost.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Chair Ryder.
Aye.
Three ayes.
The motion passes. Our next case, 23-101, Shipping Peterson, massage therapist, 15508, and its expired license. Case 23-101 is a license application requiring a public board review. Is Ms. Shipping Peterson present in this meeting? And it appears that she is not. Investigator David Elson, will you please provide a summary of this application that requires public board review?
Yes, Madam Chair. On October 16, 2023, applicant applied for a late renewal of her Arizona massage therapy license. On September 5, 2023, applicant disclosed to the board that she was imprisoned in China for 4 years for posting a Facebook comment. Based on the fact that she admitted she was in prison for 4 years since her last renewal, the board conducted an investigation. That's pretty much it. We can't get anything out of China. There's not going to be, we just have to go to on her word that it was a Facebook comment, but she disclosed that she was in prison since her last renewal, so we felt it imperative that she go before the board.
Absolutely. This is a really interesting case. This is not something that I have encountered before. We're working, well, apparently not working with another country or jurisdiction and not getting much cooperation. However, it is customary that if somebody has been incarcerated for any period of time, regardless of where, that we get more information as to why that incarceration happened, documentation of it as well, which we have not been able to obtain, and that's what makes this complicated. Investigator.
I do want to add that since her application, she has provided a DPS level one clearance card, fingerprint clearance card. So the checks that they did came back good enough that they couldn't they issued her the fingerprint clearance card.
Okay. Good to know. Yes, and I do think that was in the packet as well. Board members. Board member Tapscott.
Thank you, Chair Ryder. I want to speak carefully here. I think it's very important that we take into consideration somebody's possible criminal history, regardless of where on the planet that occurs. However, we don't recognize massage licenses from China. If people, I have students all the time that come here and we're licensed as massage therapists in another country, and we don't honor those, and they have to go back to school here. And so I'm not sure how much back and forth is really important here. It seems like this individual, to the best of our knowledge, told us the truth and met our requirements for licensure. And if we've also attempted to reach out and find out more information and can't get it from the country that this individual is incarcerated in, then we've done our due diligence. We've done our part, and we are not getting more information. We've attempted to cooperate. And so the only thing we have to go on is the individual who's applied and has a level one non-IVP fingerprint clearance card is in good standing with us. I mean, I think the bigger question here is, do they have any CEUs they need to make up and before we grant licensure and things like that? Yeah.
And according to the packet, there were some continuing education provided that I believe were fairly recent, earlier this year.
Yeah, but I have no problem approving this licensure, this application.
Vice Chair DeRoost?
Yeah, I think that from what I can tell, everything was provided. We've done our due diligence. I don't see any reason that we wouldn't move forward with it unless I'm missing something, but it seems like with the information that we've been provided and that we have, as long as the application is correct and all the information is there, then I would feel comfortable moving forward.
Okay. Then I will provide a motion. I move to grant licensure provided that all the requirements have been met by the applicant.
This is Vice Chair DeRoost, and I will second that.
And a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Vice Chair DeRoost?
Aye.
Three ayes.
The motion passes, and that concludes this application review. We currently do not have any disciplinary monitoring updates. And next on our report, item number 12, is a report by our very own special investigator, David Elson.
All right. Since the last board meeting, we've had two new cases. I'm sorry, two. I wish 12 new cases. Two have been closed. Four were heard today. I processed 150 new FD-258 fingerprint clearance cards and mailed those off to DPS. And we're currently awaiting 120 FD-258 fingerprint cards from DPS. That's about all I have.
Thank you. Item number 13 on our agenda is the Executive Director's Report. Dr. Tom Augerton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can do this very briefly. As you just heard from those last few numbers, the board is currently averaging about 300 submission of initial license application each month. This is a level of applications that has not been seen since before March of 2020, when the COVID epidemic began here in Arizona. So those numbers are up to about 300. And again, I would remind everyone that we are up to about 11,000 of the 31,000 total licensees in active status. And this year and next year, roughly 5,500 to 6,000 individuals who have not yet obtained their level one DPS card will have to do so and provide that before the renewal can be approved. The latest I'm hearing, unless the investigator has a different information, is the DPS processing is going quite quickly. Yeah, the level one cards, which had been up to a few weeks, a couple of months ago, appears to be down now to about 2 weeks or even less than 2 weeks. So that's the current flow unless the investigator has different information. The often discussed today, the conversion of the board's database, which was originally created in 2010, to the new state standard of FENTIA for regulatory boards is underway. We have successfully engaged the services of Gould Intelligent as our project manager. And I would say to you that that decision and the working in partnership with them has made the conversion very smooth and orderly and progressing. Best estimate is certainly 2024, probably the end of the first quarter of 2024, with activity to get more serious at the board, with culmination probably by May at the latest. That date is fairly certain based on what I'm hearing from Gould Intelligent. We talked about this briefly before, but not lately, but I don't have a lot of information for you, but I'm meeting tomorrow morning with our engagement manager from DOA. Our website is going to be expiring, and as such, it'll be reformatted into new technology, as has already been done in many of the other regulatory boards. And it's pretty dramatic when you see what we're currently using in primary colors to highlight categories of information, as opposed to fully operational interactive websites with some of the other boards. But that has not been funded yet, so we're kind of on a holding pattern, and I don't have any more information of that, but I did want to make you know that we will be transitioning to a new product. I would guess, I don't want to say the first half of 24, but certainly in 2024, because the funding has not yet been identified. And that's not funding to this board, that's funding to the Department of Administration to provide this for the board. And I believe that's all I have for you at this time, unless you have any questions.
Please go ahead, Board Member Tapscott.
Executive Director, just a question just for the record. How many seats do we have open on the board right now?
Madam Chair, Mr. Tapscott, thank you for asking. There are two vacancies on the state board. Both are designated as representatives chosen by the governor to represent the public. And I'm sure you don't feel that I'm obnoxious by trade or by choice, but I did send another letter to the governor's office last week reminding the interim person who's in charge of appointments for boards that we are facing, with all jokes aside, we're facing a serious situation of having adequacy of a quorum, or even more concerning, if of the three of you remaining on the board, if there were a case that would come by that you would have to recuse yourself for. So operationally, I would say that it's a critical situation, that we have made the ninth floor aware of it. And it's a challenge for a new administration to be, you know, plugging all of these vacancies in boards. But I would remind everyone listening that the one vacancy we've had for 2 years. So out of recognition of the service that the three of you were volunteering, and the imprecision of knowing when we're going to have a meeting for lack of quorum, I would say that the two vacancies represent an operational challenge for the public's work being done under Title 32.
And it sounds, and you don't need to comment on this if you don't want to, but what I'm hearing is that not only does this create an operational challenge, but this could actually affect public safety at some point, because we might not have a quorum and we might not be able to weigh in on cases that, you know, could truly affect the public.
Well, as everyone is well aware from Tony's walkthrough this morning of how many moving cogs there are inside the bureaucracy of the massage board, you're also aware of the fact that all the cogs are monitored by the Arizona Auditor General's office. And if we haven't mentioned this lately, the board does terminate in less than 2 years based on the last sunset performance audit. So the new audit will be beginning just as soon as this last one has ended. We did file our six-month report. At your last meeting, I gave you a reminder that we filed an addendum report with the regulations that responded to the specific failures that were identified in the sunset performance audit. But there will be a need for legislation to prevent the board from disappearing But one of the things that the board is judged very seriously on by the Auditor General is how long it takes the time from an initial complaint to an initial review to an investigation, discussion with the Attorney General's office, adjudication before the board, and final resolution. And the goal, of course, is 180 days. And there are a lot of legitimate reasons by both the state and the respondents that goes beyond the 180 days. But when it gets into a failure to have a quorum, Mr. Tapscott, then you are correct. You're identifying a deficiency in operations that are dealing with issues that deal with literally public protection. So it's a challenge and a serious challenge, but we are but one of many, many thousands of priorities for the executive branch of government. So all we can do is they need to be more obnoxious. So.
Thank you, Director. Without being too redundant, I want to mention, you had mentioned that our board's website is expiring, and we've been mandated to have a new website, correct?
Well, it's not, Madam Chair, it's not necessarily a legislative mandate, but it's a phase out of older technology, which is being done across the board. And unfortunately, we fall into that niche where the funding, the mandate is there, but the funding is not available. So we know this is coming, and we're not expected to get the funding, but the funding that is necessary has not yet been secured or, in fact, guaranteed.
Has funding been provided for other boards?
Madam Chair, yes.
Interesting. Okay. Again, without being redundant, and I have been told that people do like to hear me talk. I don't like to hear myself talk, but I want to mention you had already sent another email regarding hopefully getting any updates on filling the vacancies of our current board. And I can only speak for myself and for where I sit, and I don't speak for the board in its entirety, but to me it seems like there is no sense of urgency to fill these vacancies, considering that one of those seats has been vacant for over a year. I understand that there are other boards that also have vacancies. However, other boards are not my problem. This one is, and I do want to say that during our performance audit, and you had mentioned this already, our board was cited for noncompliance of closing cases within the 180-day period. It may be cutting it close. At this point, it has not happened yet with this current board, but with the previous board. But just at our last meeting, we accepted new policies and procedures, one believing that we would be able to accomplish closing these cases in 180 days, and that was ample time to conduct investigations and formally hear a case. With the exception of a couple of the cases that are frequent our agenda and are currently on our agenda. Here's my problem. We only have a board of three. Two who are industry professionals with many ties to many massage therapists due to reputation in foundational education as well as continuing education. The chances are very great that we may have a case that we cannot even bring forth to the board because of conflict. We may know an individual and therefore have to recuse ourselves. I'm aware of at least one case that we cannot even bring to the board at this point because of this very situation. So not only are we failing to be compliant once again, but as you can see, it is not for our lack of effort, but for the lack of urgency in filling our seat vacancies, which is not anything that we can do. There's nothing that we can do about that. So I'm saying this not to place blame, but to create a sense of urgency to whomever needs to hear it. I know that everybody has a job to do and everybody's jobs are difficult, but I see this as a setup for failure for our board by not filling these seats with the constant road bumps and hiccups that our board experiences, whether it's licensing, whether it's filling seats, whether it's the ability to hear cases, each one of these things are, they're stacking up against the board and setting us up to fail. And I really just wanted to say that publicly and for record, that we need, as much as we want to do better, it's hard to do better when you don't have the means to do it. Board Member Tapscott.
Just a quick question. I think I'm aware of the case you're talking about, but are we not bringing cases to the board because of a perceived conflict of interest? Actually not bringing them? I assume we'd still bring them to the board and then announce conflict of interest. Okay, that's correct. Okay, good. So okay, that's what I want to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to, before we move on, are there any other comments regarding the executive director's report that I spoke so much on? Okay. Let's see. Item number 14, review and proposals for possible board agenda items for action for future state meetings. I would like at one of our next meetings, probably in January, to discuss another situation that often comes up in our industry, and that is one of body sculpting and other equipment being used in the massage therapy to affect soft tissue, and whether we are regulating that or not. There's a lot of people that are getting training from particular companies that use a particular type of machine. They're providing training to people. Machines do provide some type of soft tissue manipulation to maybe whether it's, you know, affect the lymphatic system, to promote a sculpting, type of effect. And so the discussion would be, does that in fact need a license because it is still a type of massage, but using a machine? So that's what I would like to have put on the next agenda. Vice Chair DeRoos, do you have anything that you would like to have on a future meeting?
I don't, but I will just make a note that January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and so it's a great opportunity to just be aware of what's going on in the industry. And I know we'll probably have some trainings on it, but I just wanted to put that, since that's the next time formally we'll all be coming back together, but it is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So,
thank you so much for that. Board Member Tapscott.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Executive Director, do you have anything that you'd like to add before we end this meeting?
The only thing I have for you guys is that the meeting, the briefing that was scheduled for today will be rescheduled in January with Steve Mortel, who represents the AMTA at the state legislature, and he felt that even the delay would provide him with more useful information at that briefing in January.
Thank you so much. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I think that was well worth 3 additional continuing education hours. The next monthly board meeting is scheduled for January 22nd, 2024 at 9 a.m. We are not having one in December, a regularly scheduled December meeting. However, Executive Director may be in contact with us for a brief one regarding proposed language for legislation. That being said, I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Please have a safe and happy holiday, and thank you everybody for attending this meeting. This meeting is adjourned.